to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Welcome back to another episode of The Pro, The Protege and The Hack, where we prick a brewing topic and do our best to explain it to everyone whilst taking the absolute piss out of each other. On tonight's chat with The Pro and The Protege, it is all about yeast. Yep, those amazing little live organisms that we throw into our wort in either liquid or dried form. They swim about in the sugary liquid for a few days, chowing down on the sugars, excreting alcohol and farting out CO2. And speaking of farts, let me welcome my regular guests, the pro Dave Padden from Akasha Brewing and the protege Ben Miller, who brews under the name From Ben. Welcome, lads.
What a great introduction.
I don't mind being introduced as a fart, to be fair.
It's pretty close to the reality.
Ben, are we going to have to take regular breaks tonight for you to like cough off mic and all that sort of stuff, seeing as you're sick? You going to be okay?
Yeah, lucky you can't catch coronavirus through the microphone.
So you can't joke about coronavirus, Ben?
No, I don't. No, it's all right, mate. You don't need to shut the business down.
So what happened this week? It got a bit serious because you've been hanging around like a bad smell at Akasha.
Oh, I did. I brewed at Akasha, but just had a bit of a niggling cough, and the old the doctor suggested I went and got a COVID test, and I did, and I was negative. So.
Dave, you would have been fucking spewing if he'd have shut down your brewery after all the stuff you've been through.
I wasn't too concerned because I actually wasn't here when he was. So I'm not sure what that says, but I would have been.
Yeah, I still came to your house.
Hey?
I still sat on your dinner table.
Oh, that's right. You came and dropped through on the way through.
Yeah. So probably even worse. There was way more close proximity. Yeah,
But Dave, if your brewers had been sent home sick, you wouldn't have been able to brew because you've probably forgotten after sitting up in your ivory tower just running the business side of the brewery lately.
I take offense to that, Chris. So I bet you're right.
Well, all's well that ends well, and you're here with us tonight, which is just great. Ben, it's so good to hear your voice, mate, and you're sounding great on your new microphone and computer setup.
Thanks, mate.
It's all good. It's all good. Right, let's talk about yeast. I'm going to say it's fair to say that yeast is probably one of the more puzzling elements of brewing. I mean, you take a look at those dried packets that we've all started off brewing with in early days, and there's no way that they look like a living organism. Am I right?
That's right. They're pretty cool.
Well, you can't really see them with the naked eye. There's a fair few of them in there, that's for sure.
Yep. Yeah. I like to think of them, though, as sea monkeys. Do you remember those things as a kid?
Yes. Even I do.
They're a little bit more exciting than sea monkeys, though, I reckon.
Yeah, pretty much. Used to get those comics, and back in the 80s, you get the comics on the back of the comic, you'd have the ability to order off to get your sea monkeys. I loved them.
Would that be like Mad Magazine, Chris?
Yeah, some of that sort of stuff, yeah, back in the day, and Cracked. And all those sorts of crappy ones. But my kids have recently had my daughter has got some sea monkeys in recent times. You get them from Kmart, I think, now. And they are the most boring things ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I could make beer with sea monkeys when I was a kid, I reckon they would have been heaps funner.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Hey, so I mentioned that crude way of describing yeast in the opener, but that's pretty much what happens, isn't it?
Well, to an extent, yeah. I mean, there's plenty more behind it than that, but in essence, that's really what they do. They metabolize and they fart out alcohol and CO2.
Well, put it this way. You can probably have beer without hops, which would be pretty shit, but almost without malt. But without yeast, we're pretty stuffed, right? So they're pretty important. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I don't get it, because we're always raving on about what amazing stuff the hops do and that, but everybody seems to forget about poor old yeast and just – it's like a bit of an afterthought, isn't it?
It depends what sort of brew you are, I think. We play around with a couple of different yeasts here, lager yeast and ale yeast, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some stage. But because we are a hop-forward brewery and brewing plenty of IPAs and pale ales and things like that, we tend to brew with a pretty neutral yeast. So some, it doesn't get forgotten, but certainly does get pushed to the back a little bit sometimes. Whereas if you've got a brewery that's focusing on a Belgian type of beer, for instance, yeast really is more of a front seat ingredient because they're getting a lot more of the flavor profiles from the yeast.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's something up to 70% of the flavor profile of a beer can be made up of what the yeast does.
Not in Ben's beer, that's for sure.
Oh, come on, mate.
Come on. Jeez, it's only early.
That's,
only
real, that's real strong coming from the bloke who's built a whole brewery brewing with USO5.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I think, if you put American style beers aside, then that's certainly the case. But I think certainly with the American style hop forward beers, it'd be a lot less than 70%, that's for sure.
Definitely. But it is still important though. Like it's definitely, especially with the hazies. That's massive, you know. A lot of the esters that we rely on come from those specific strains of yeast to really give us that profile that we're after. But also they also contribute massively to mouthfeel and how the beer finishes, whether or not you want it to be a higher attenuating yeast or a lower attenuating yeast. It makes a big difference. But I think going back to what you were saying before with it being such a minor part is because in a lot of sense it is a very minor part of brewing. You do your big brew day and then you tip the yeast in.
Chuck it in.
But like they say, the saying goes, a brewer makes wort and yeast makes beer. And it's very true.
Dropping the knowledge. I like it.
It's very true. I can't actually remember where I heard that. I've known it for a few years, but I can't remember where I heard it. But it's true. It's very true.
From your mentor?
Dave.
No. All right, you've already dropped in a few little sort of terms around yeast so far. So let's go back to the absolute simplest things. We've got top and bottom fermenting yeast. Tell me about that.
Most yeast can be split into two main categories, being ale or lager yeast, and most our yeasts are what we call top fermenting. So the top fermenting yeast, they tend to be more vigorous, so a little bit more active. And even so much as some of the more traditional breweries in the past would actually harvest yeast for subsequent brews from the actual, you know, by scooping it off the top of the fermentation. That's how, you know, off the top of the fermenting wort, if you like. So, and the lager yeast tend to be what we call bottom fermenting yeast. They're a lot, they're usually a lot sort of less active, take a little bit longer typically to ferment through. And play more down the bottom of the wort rather than sitting on the top and being so active like a top fermenting yeast. So
what differentiates whether they're going to sit at the top or the bottom? Is one lot fat bastards that sink to the bottom, the other one's skinny and float, or what?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know either. Actually, just came to me. I was just in the big issues here.
Would temperature have a big part of that too? I mean,
the top I like so.
Temperature, I mean, I don't know if that's – because that's actually – you know what? That's actually something I've never looked into. But I do wonder, because it tends to be, you know, bottom fermenting yeasts are at a lower temperature. So
yeah.
I do wonder if that tends to play a part in it too. I couldn't pinpoint that exactly.
I'm not really sure.
Actually, I should look that up. That's something –
maybe you should have fucking looked it up before we had this chat about yeast on podcast or not, maybe. I don't know. Do your study.
We're getting a little bit too comfortable now, mate. I think we're just going to jump on and wing it.
You just do zero prep. Hey, speaking of the temperature, you know, you get on your yeast packets, you've got your temperature range, and there's something like 10 degrees. So, but I want to know what's the prime, you know, temperature that you guys like to use in the commercial sense in terms of an ale or a lager yeast?
Commercial and home brewing's the same because you know what I mean? It depends on what you want.
But you probably dialing it in a little bit more when you're in a commercial situation, whereas, you know, blokes. Yeah. Out the back, get close to 21 and we're good.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I tend to, if I'm doing an ale, I like to pitch at around 20 but I pretty much as soon as it's pitched, I will back it off to 18, let it do its thing for a couple of days and then eventually ramp back up to 20 when it's sort of at about maybe 60% attenuation, I suppose.
Yep.
Lager yeast, same again, maybe 2 degrees above whatever you decide to ferment it at. Everyone's different with lager. Yeah, lager's sort of, you know, you go down to sort of 9 degrees or up to about 13, I think, and you're sort of, you're okay, because in general, the lower temperatures and lager yeast or bottom fermenting yeast produce less esters and phenols than what an ale yeast does. So, yeah, at those lower temperatures, you do have lower ester or phenol production. So if you go from, you know, whereas the difference between fermenting a ale yeast at, I don't know, 21 degrees versus 18 degrees, well, then your ester and phenol production is going to be a lot higher than what you'd get in that temperature variance in a lager yeast. So, but I've just realized too, we haven't done something. We haven't opened a beer.
Well, no, I opened mine. I don't know about you guys.
I forgot to do it on. I'm sorry.
It's all me. I'm drinking Dave's Blacksmith. So,
nice.
Smells good.
I haven't had one of Dave's beers in a while. I'm still waiting for that package. Remember that package, Ben?
Yeah, I'm just waiting. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm drinking a Blood Orange, which is again, a store door only release. So you won't have that either. I'm sorry.
No. I've got something you guys won't get your hands on. I've got a Spotty Dog Chico Strata IPA.
Ooh, sounds good.
Always for you. Yeah. But I think getting back to those temperatures, I think, there's so many. I mean, we said that there's two main groups of yeast. There's obviously within those groups, there's yeah, it's a bit like hops. When we talk about hops, there's hundreds of different varieties available. The same goes for yeast and available from all over the world, used to develop different styles. Each of those yeasts has its ideal temperature. And I think, in most breweries, they'll usually focus on 1, 2, 3, or 4 of those yeasts and get into a pocket that they know works for them. But each of those yeasts really has its own ideal temperature. And, Ben and I use a lot for West Coast, usually Chico yeast, which is USO5, WLP 001, Y yeast 1056, all pretty much the same yeast. Loves being around that sort of 18 to 20 degree mark, but you can get some yeasts that prefer it a lot hotter and some a little bit cooler, like a Kolsch is an ale yeast, but really likes playing down at that 15, 16 degree temperature range to give a really, really beautiful clean profile.
That's a good point, actually. And there's one that I like using, I have used for a few of my hazies, which is a WLP 644, which is Saccharomyces bruxellensis toi, or sac toi for short, but it's like that ferments at like 26 degrees. That loves it. That just because it's such an ester driven yeast. It like just throws out heaps of mango and pineapple. It is packaged as just a straight sac strain, like it's safe to use even though it's got bruxellensis. I can't remember what the exact terminology was it behind. So at first they thought it was a Brett strain or it had Brett in it or something like that. I can't quite remember, but now it's packaged as just a safe to use.
So let's just pause for 1 second and talk about what you've been throwing those little words around, esters, phenols, alcohols, that sort of thing. Can you explain for the listeners what the esters are?
Esters are your more sort of like fruit forward or producing flavors out of the yeast. So you've got, things like banana, I guess, well, Belgian beers, I suppose, would be some of them. You get a lot of fruit forward stuff. So for instance, some of the hazy yeasts I do will throw like quite a real strong peach, stone fruit kind of ester.
Yeah, okay.
Pineapple, Brettanomyces is good for that, I think, from memory. That's especially if you co-ferment Bretts, you can get a nice sort of pineapple-y flavor out of it. Yeah, Dave?
Yeah, I think it's
– just hold on, Dave, hold on. Ben, are you flicking a fucking pen?
Sorry.
Okay. Shut up with it. Back to you, Dave.
I forgot what I was going to say now.
I'm just going to interrupt myself for a minute, and I thought I'd do something different from now on. You know, I'm always on to you lot about helping me spread the craft beer gospel, and the best way to help me out is to rate and review via the Apple Podcasts. I know, I've said it so many times, but I thought I'd just mention it again. So, from now on, I'm going to read out the new reviews and give you a shout-out for helping me out. So, some of the most recent ones I've seen? From Hazy Holiday, they say, a must listen for any home brewer or beer lover. Episode 31 is brilliant for hop education. Thanks, Hazy. And yep, that chat with Dr. Shellhammer is still one of the most popular episodes on here. I love that one. It was a ripper. Next up is the Brew Pig from WA. And he says, such an interesting and wide variety of guests from all kinds of different areas of the beer industry. Geez, I hope he does get Chris Hemsworth on one day. Me too, Brew Pig. But look, I'm just not going to hold my breath. And lastly, G-Fud Fruff Booger Jigger Fussard. I don't know who that is, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that isn't their real name. This is my favourite review of late. G-Fud says, the guy's a goose, but in the best possible way. Wonderfully entertaining chats with peeps in the Anzac beer industry. Thanks, I think, mate. Thanks, everyone, for your support. And if you want your review read out next week, you know what you have to do. Jump on Apple Podcasts, find the Beer Healer Interviews page, rate, subscribe, and write a quick review. It's that easy. Now back to the podcast.
From memory, it's the acids within the beer or the wort reacting with the alcohol that does it. And the higher the temp, obviously, the more esters we tend to get from the yeast. So, but yeah, Ben's described some of it. It's usually a fruity type aroma. The difference between phenolics and esters usually have that really, really, really nice fruity aroma to it, unless you go too hot and they can get pretty bad. But whereas phenols often, for me, are usually an off flavor. So
unless you go unless you go like the Belgian scale of it, whereas like the clove and spice or a saison or something like that, where they're a desirable phenol, but you know, on a normal ale yeast, or like if you were going to brew an IPA and it came through with a hell of a lot of clove or spice, but phenols can come through as like smokiness and stuff too, can't they?
Can actually be faults in the beer, so you've got to be real careful with them if you're not brewing a Belgian style beer. Phenols can be a bit of a worry sometimes.
Yeah, have you guys got like a favorite yeast flavor that you like to produce in your beers, like you might do, you know, with a tropical note on a hop?
It depends on the beer that me personally, that's such a broad question because it totally depends on what I'm brewing at the time.
Yep.
Like I think it's 3711 is is it Y yeast product? Is this Belgian Saison strain? I think it's 3711 is, or that might be the French Saison, but they up around like the 30, 32 degree mark, which sounds ridiculous, but they just punch out some amazing Saison characteristics. Some of the best I've personally had anyway. So, but then, like I said before, with the hazies, you know, depending on, I've played around with quite a lot of different yeast strains and it just depends on the beer, but then a general IPA or a pale ale, I'm a lot like Dave in the sense that I just like a really good neutral yeast to really let those hops and malt shine, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, I think with the more traditional West Coast IPAs, we're trying to mute most of those esters to give the nice clean profile to let the hops come through. But I think certainly over the last couple of years as we've moved towards hazy beers, we're really starting to play with some of the more traditional yeast like London Ale 3 that we tend, well, we're all derivatives of that. We're seeing a lot of brewers use for their hazies for a number of different reasons, but they really are biotransforming with the hops. They are bringing out a lot of more of those really cool fruity flavors that go so well with the hops and make these things so juicy. So London Ale 3 certainly is something we like to use in terms of bringing out some of those esters, but also some of the Alchemist. I can't think of the name. What's the name of the yeast?
Conan strain.
Yeah, Conan strain. Really gives some nice funky esters as well.
Cool. So, mate, I know you are a hop forward brewery, and so you do a lot of your flavors are coming from the hops. But in a typical brewery like yours, like how many yeast strains might you be using across your whole range of beers? I know you'd be different probably to some others, but just a general number.
Oh, look, we're running three strains at the moment, so it's not too many. Ben mentioned before, you know, we West Coast is probably in three quarters of our beers now.
Yep,
we're starting to use a lot more of those English yeasts for our hazies. So our hazies, we're definitely we chop and change a little bit between the different English strains. Most of the hazy yeasts are derivatives of an English strain. So
Yep.
And then obviously we've got a lager yeast as well. So they're generally the three that we use.
Yeah, okay. I was imagining there'd be quite a few more.
If we're doing a Belgian style, then we'll crack out a Belgian yeast or something
on as needs basis sort of thing.
Yeah, and that sort of goes back to what I was saying before as well, is that, like, you know, a certain favorite yeast, or I personally have a favorite yeast per style, but it would be too hard for me to say that I have a favorite all round yeast because of, you know, if I was to answer that, it would probably be USO5 just purely because it lets the beer shine more so than, you know what I mean? It's just a really straight down the middle, really good performing yeast. You get really good results out of it every time. It's very consistent, you know what I mean? And also it's a dry yeast, so you don't need to do a starter if you have the correct amount. So
that was going to be my next question. Like, in my head, I always imagine that as soon as you become a big brewer, you're going to switch over to liquid yeast. But is that not actually always the case?
That's a good question. And probably 10, 15 years ago, you might have said that's the case. Most dry yeasts are very good quality these days. USO5 has been around for donkey's years, and it's very little difference between that and the wet variety. So, and it's handy, right? We try and reuse. And I guess getting back to how many yeasts you've got in the brewery, if you don't have too many, you've got one yeast that you're using across a number of different beers, you are able to reuse that yeast. So, whether it starts as dry or liquid, it's really handy to be able to reuse yeast as much as possible, both for economics, but I think there's no doubt.
And how are you doing that? Are you literally getting in the bottom of your fermenter and getting it out with a bucket, or how's that work?
Just scoop it out bare hands.
one of the biggest things we try and do, we spend a lot of time, is making sure yeast is clean. Bucket won't help with that. But
bucket.
Sanitizer.
Come on, mate.
Sanitizer bucket first, you'll be right.
Put a star sand in the bucket.
There are breweries that still do that, but we're certainly not one of them. But we call it cone to cone. So we literally have a closed transfer, not too dissimilar to how you would transfer beer between tanks. We're transferring yeast.
Yep.
And using flow meters and that to ensure we get a good idea of how much yeast is going from one vessel to the next before we re-pitch on it. So,
fuck a bit. That
wasn't me. That was Dave.
I reckon that phone was right next to your click and pen, mate. But we either do a straight cone to cone, or if we need, for us, we dry hop most beers, so there's a very small window between when we can use the yeast. If we miss that window, we have a couple of storage devices that we can transfer into that device, keep it clean, and then transfer it back within a week or two into another bed.
How many times can you reuse your yeast with that method?
Depends how clean you are.
Okay.
If you can keep try and keep as much hot matter out of the yeast, keep it clean. Probably don't have time to go into it today, but ensuring that you're always transferring or storing very healthy yeast. You can go up to 7 or 8 times.
Shit. And can you tell the difference in a beer that's maybe on version 1 of the yeast to version 7 of the yeast?
You can tell from the way it behaves. I'm a big believer, in that yeast gets better after a couple of generations. And
really?
The bigger we've got, the more we reuse yeast, the more we've realised. And it's relatively well documented that it's almost like the yeast gets an understanding of what type of beer and what it needs to do. So we find there's a number of rules which we say we don't pitch into a new beer that's of a lower gravity starting.
You always go up.
As long as you follow the rules, we find that the yeast gets healthier. It sort of really gets into a rhythm with what it needs to do. You find your fermentations are quicker and cleaner.
So is that whole repitching into a beer that's a higher gravity about having more sugars in there for them to convert or snack on? Are they getting hungrier as they get older?
They get used to it, if that makes sense. If they're used to munching on it's a different environment going into a lower gravity beer. And a higher gravity beer, you need some pretty healthy yeast. You need more of them. Just going backwards just doesn't. They tend to be a little bit lazy going back. You know, they get used to eating through beer that's got a higher sugar content, and they just can get a little bit lazy if you're going backwards into a beer with a lower starting gravity.
That probably goes back to that over-pitching thing too, as well as that. Well, if you go backwards, you are going to end up with a much stronger and higher cell count. So I think with over-pitching, like Dave said, you can actually end up, it's almost too easy for the yeast. So I think they don't go through a full cell generation sort of period or whatever it is. So you end up with, towards the back end of your ferment, you end up with a lazier yeast because they don't go through that full cell production process. Okay.
Let's drop it back down to the homebrew size now and talk about over-pitching. Hmm. What would over-pitching in a homebrew situation look like? If you're brewing a 20-litre type thing, two, three, four packets of dry or?
It's a little bit like temperature, I think. You know, it really depends. The biggest one, it's the yeast you're using, but it really depends on the gravity of your beer. The higher the gravity of beer, the more cells you need. And there's a bunch of calculators online that I would really encourage people to use and get used to using. We've got some software here. We count yeast, so we count before we pitch, so that we know for every milliliter of beer how many cells are in it. And
oh wow.
So for a 1056 USO5, whatever, I think we're usually for an IPA somewhere between 6 and 12 million cells per mil. But that's a general, you know, the higher the alcohol, the more your cells you need. But there's a bunch of tools out there you can use, just throw it in. Even we use a lot of White Labs yeast. And when we actually order the yeast, they say to them, what's the gravity of the beer you're going to put it into? They actually calculate it for us.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So we go with what's called a pitchable quantity. So if we get a new pitch from White Labs, they'll deliver, let's say, 10 litres of beer from the States. Gets here. We order on a Friday, gets here on Monday. It's pretty amazing, actually. It's in a fully insulated box, still frozen around it.
You're buying your yeast with beer coming to you.
Sorry. Comes in like a starter solution.
They have a starter work.
So 10 litres,
what they call a pitchable quantity. We calculate how many cells we need for that beer. We literally throw it in like you would a dry yeast, add it in, and away it goes, and then we can continue to repitch that over a few generations.
It's essentially the same as what you get in a, like a small liquid pack. Except it is, like Dave said, it's a pitchable quantity, so you don't need to make a starter because, think about trying to make a starter for, 5,000 litres of beer. You'd need. It's a big process. So, yeah, by buying it at pitchable quantities, it's you're buying essentially what you get in a store when you get your little packs, but in, what do they come in, Dave, 2 or 4 litre cubes, I think they do, don't they?
Yeah, we tend to buy. Yeah, we buy them in two, just so we've got a little bit of flexibility.
I'm thinking of the gig yeast ones, but the White Labs one, they come in little. Actually, they're just a big version of the little White Labs sack. They're quite cool. You seen those? The new White Labs packaging, Chris?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I've only ever used dry yeast.
Oh, okay. Well, White Labs come in these cool little white little sort of plastic satchel things, I suppose, but the big commercial ones are literally just giant versions of that, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
Hey, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
So do you think sometimes sticking with the homebrew thing for the moment, there's confusion around creating a yeast starter and rehydrating dry yeast?
Oh, yeah. So I think it is, and Dave probably knows more on this, read the fermenter stuff, but I know for a fact that those USO5 yeasts and most fermentous yeasts, or if not all, are designed to not be rehydrated because I think they have they got on them, Dave, like a coating on them, don't they, that helps activate the yeast once it goes into wort. It's something.
Yeah, it's been well documented by fermenters that it's recommended. Look, you don't need to – at the end of the day, you do not need to rehydrate them. Sprinkling it on the top is fine, and that's exactly what we do when we're using the dry yeast.
Yep.
And as a homebrewer, I've always recommended homebrewers not to do it because it's just another opportunity to introduce an infection into the beer, to be honest. Yep. And I've seen people do some pretty dodgy things rehydrating the yeast. Yep. If you really wanted to do it, you'd need a closed vessel, you'd need, sanitize, well, not sanitize, but clean water, whatever that means. I just don't understand why you would do it, because it's just another opportunity for infection, and fermenters will tell you that you do not need to do it.
The other thing is too, is like dry yeast is so simple, you know. As a general rule, when I first started brewing, it was anything over 1050 I would use two packs for. But
that's good to know, yeah.
The other thing is like Dave said, you're sanitizing your knife or whatever you cut it open with. This is another thing that a lot of people probably don't do and don't realize they need to do, is sanitize the outside of the packet of your yeast packet. Sanitize what you're cutting it open with, or if you peel it open. If not, I wear gloves when I do mine, and I spray alcohol spray all over my hands everywhere. And then
you're pretty dirty though.
So I'm that's fair filthy. But you know, that's a very simple process of going yeast into beer and keeping it clean. You got two packs or one pack or whatever it might be. So by adding that process, it's just like Dave said, it's just another thing that can go wrong. But whereas like liquid yeast, you do tend to need to do a starter, because most packs only come with 200 billion cells. Now, if you're pitching into, I don't know, let's say 25 liters of a 1060 wort, well, you probably need about 600 billion to 800 billion cells. So you've got to grow
a few more yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So your yeast packet really isn't, you're going to tip that in there, and that's just going to go, holy shit, we got a lot of work to do. It's going to stress it's going to stress your yeast, and then you're going to end up with, like we were talking about before, a way higher ester, more phenols than anything, and fusel alcohols with a stressed yeast. You know, so that's why liquid yeast, it's important to do a starter, but dry yeast, you just need to buy the right amount and take out that process pretty much.
Okay, so when you're talking about stressed yeast, like they've just got so much more sugar to work through that they, I don't know, do they become bulimic and just try filling themselves up too quickly and then spew out?
Well, yeah, and they can die out early too.
Yep.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah, I'm a simple man.
They can die out early too, because there's just – they start dying off because
– engorged.
They're so full, they can't fucking do what they're supposed to do, and half of them will die out, and then the other half that's left remaining has got way more work to do again. Yeah. So if you pitch a yeast and your beer's not going within 2 days, you got problems. You should be seeing activity within 12 hours.
Yeah. I'm just imagining going. These fat yeasties, just like they're so fat and filled. Food coma. They just want to sit on the couch in their undies and put their hand in their pants.
That's food coma.
You can see we're talking about the generational yeast, how it really does improve over a few generations. And when you've got a good healthy pitch that's a few generations in, it's taken off within hours. It's amazing the difference it makes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And that same thing goes for a good liquid yeast starter too. If you have a really good active starter going and you pitch that, liquid yeast in general, if you have a good starter going, should go a little bit quicker than dry USO5, of course, because dry USO5 in that sense, I guess, is inactive. It's not working very hard. But same with the liquid. You have a good pitch of liquid yeast in there, you'll be airlock bubbling within probably 2 hours after pitching sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, I know, Dave, your mates are Will Tatchell. You know what he does down there down here in Tassie with his wild ales. Have you guys ever wanted to, you know, dabble in that same space and maybe collect a wild yeast strain from Marrickville or Western Sydney or something like that?
Marrickville? I'm not in Marrickville.
Where are you? Sorry. I group you all into the one lot out there. Marrickville-ish.
Five Dock,
sorry. Do you ever want to grab a indigenous yeast strain from Five Dock and put it in a beer?
Just a bit of a touch of icy on the side and all of that.
Oh, come on. This is a beautiful area of Sydney.
Yeah.
But we certainly don't. I'm interested in it, but not from our brewery's perspective. But I know Ben's done a little bit of work with this, so it's probably a good one for him to take the
contribute. I have successfully done two, and I am very proud of them. And you know what I also did was went through the Blue Mountains in the middle of spring a couple of years ago and collected a whole bunch of flower samples. I took my alcohol spray with me. I took gloves with me, test tubes full of wort, Everything.
I just had a picture of you skipping through the fucking posies
in the field. Was that like you, it wasn't a, that wasn't a, that wasn't an imagination. You're just remembering back when we went camping the other week.
steady on.
Oh, sorry. So I actually
you got yeast from them?
I did, but what I did is
yeah,
I
we
didn't,
got some yeast when we came.
I didn't act on them soon enough, and I had cultures going in the test tubes, and they all died. But what I have done now is my wife and I made a wine a little while ago out of grapes, out of Shiraz grapes. So the vine originally came from, or the cutting came from Hunter Valley. So there are Shiraz grapes grown at work. And every year this vine goes mental. Like I picked 20 kilos of grapes off it one day and it didn't even look like I touched it. It just goes mental. But so I froze them not knowing what to do with them. But then I ended up throwing those in the bin because it was like 2 years later and I was like, I've got 20 kilos of grapes in the freezer. I don't even know what to use these for. But my boss is an old Maltese guy. And I came back to the yard just this year, this season just been, and he chucked this big pile of grapes in me. He said, "You'll make wine." I was like, "Okay." So we chucked it in a sanitized bucket. I got Janice to properly stomp on it and everything. It was quite cool, actually. And then I did a skin contact fermentation, but 100% wild. So what I did, long story short, once that wine was done, is I pulled it off the skins, let it do it. So it's still aging now and stainless. But then with those skins, I brewed a 20% wheat, 80% Pilsner wort at like 71 degree mash. So nice, big, long chain sugars. And just threw it straight back on top of the grape skins. And this went absolutely ballistic. It went mental. So, and it's still sitting there now aging. It grew this fantastic, big, thick white pellicle on the top of it. Really, like a really great yeast, but it's such an interesting flavored beer because every single time I try it, it's different. That one is very like PDO Ford. It's quite... it's sharp. It's very sour. It's sharp. But on the other side of it, I did a Feijoa sour, which was, if people don't know what a Feijoa is, they're a fruit that grows pretty massively in New Zealand. You can buy them in Queensland and Adelaide. They're grown quite commonly commercially up there and down there as well. Another name for them is a pineapple guava, and they're really interesting fruit. I love them, but a lot of people don't like them because they have a medicinal sort of a taste. But anyway, I did the same thing again with them, and a lady around the corner from me ended up having a Feijoa tree, and I got probably 100 kilos of Feijoas off her. Same thing though, just cut the fruit up, threw them into a jar, into a big glass, actually your old glass, Carboy Dave.
Yeah.
Threw it into that. Nice. The same thing again, 20% wheat, 80% Pilsner. Threw it on top and not 70 degrees. And I went to like 10 IBUs, dumped it on top. And within probably 3 days, I started having activity. And then that one fermented out quite quickly, actually down to 10-10, and has made a really beautiful, it's not very sour, it's about 3.8. Really beautiful, refreshing, light, almost like a, it's 5%, so it's not quite a table beer, but it's got that same sort of characteristic to it. So what I did was I emptied that and then brewed again and put it straight back on top of it, and it fermented out in like 3 days. And I fermented,
shit,
I mashed this thing at like 72 degrees this time. So a really hot mash, super long chain sugars, but I've managed to capture a really, really, really strong and stable wild yeast, which is super exciting. And
that's awesome.
If anyone out there listening has tried it, they'll know how hard it is to do. And I'm like, and yeah, it's purely by chance. You either have a good one or you don't. You know, I've probably tried 20 times to have wild yeasts off mandarins that, you know, I had a kumquat tree at my old house. I just could never do it. So it's awesome.
It's fucking everywhere. I love it. It really interests me. I remember.
It's so exciting, man. And it is. It's really, really like, you know, it's probably I'm probably the most proud of that Feijoa beer, especially out of all of them, because it's such a neat, like you say, it's just such an exciting experience. And and I brewed with Steve Holmeschild in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, I was going to mention you. I remember you went to him, yeah.
Mate, like just, you know, I tasted and smelt his yeasts that had come off, you know, he'd rub sharks down. He showed me all the photos and the locations of the shark sanctuary they went to, and it's just so cool. That stuff really is just a next level of brewing. That
he is a next level dude, isn't
funny
he?
Really say that. I actually just shipped him a t-shirt today. I just sent it off in the post. But oh, nice. Funny you should say that. Is it like
did you ship our shirts at the same time, mate?
Sorry?
Did you ship our shirts at the same time?
What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you –
Costa,
I'm
put it in with Dave's beer.
Oh, you took it out of my mouth. I was going to say I'll give Dave his one personally, but your one can go, and when Dave decides, you send you some beer. It's very interesting.
Yeah, like I remember when Steve's got those wild days where he's got them off like volcanoes and all sorts of shit around there. Like just
so cool.
Unreal. I remember seeing an episode of one of those beer shows one time. This dude, home brewer, brewed his with a log. He had a log that he found in the forest one time and found out it had yeast on it, and he'd throw that fucking log into his beer to ferment it.
Well, funny you should say that. I believe Saccharomyces, is it Cervaceae? What's the main? I can't remember what the ale yeast. That is, well, one of the Saccharomyces strains is found in tree sap. So and I think there's a Nordic brewery that does their cool ship every year. They hollow out a tree and they run their wort through the center of a tree into a cool ship, and that's how they inoculate it, which is super cool.
That's cool.
Super cool.
I love the idea of cool. God, how many different directions can a yeast conversation really go in? Like, it's too much for one night, really.
That's crazy, but the thing is as well, it's captivating to talk about too. You don't ever – for me anyway, it is just so interesting. It's just amazing. It's amazing, cool. The possibilities and what it can do, and something that is around us all the time. Can just do that, which is in turn, that's how they discovered it, I suppose, because they didn't even understand that there was, I think the Reinheitsgebot board had to be changed once they discovered yeast.
What was making the beer?
They had to because I think originally it was out of just the water. Three. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And then they had to reject, because there was, I think originally they used to, they had like spoons, like wooden spoons, and they knew that if they stirred the beer with that wooden spoon, they'd make a good beer. And it turns out that was their culture on the similar to
the log.
Yeah, to the log, similar to the Kvike, the wood things, whatever they had. Yep. Same thing. Yep. Pretty cool.
I don't know, Dave, if you saw Will Tatchell's post on his Instagram recently where he has a trailer, which is his cool ship, and it was this steaming wort out just in the middle of his farm, just doing its thing with the Everton yeast out there. I love it.
Yeah, I do love it. He does some great things out there. He's such a good bloke too.
He goes all right, I suppose. He goes all right.
He goes all right. That'd be like me saying that Ben Miller's all right.
We know you love each other.
One of us drives a Hilux.
I've been copping shit lately, speaking of that sort of stuff, from Will for not having manly enough power tools on this house flip I'm doing.
What are you
I'm using my DeWalt's.
Oh, DeWalt's,
Yeah, so back in the day, DeWalt used to be one of the tough brands, but then all of a sudden you got all these other ones
Milwaukee's the only way to go.
Yeah, well, I'm on a budget with this house flip.
It's me saying that, and I've got these dirty, cheap impact drivers and stuff at home, but if I had to use them all the time, I'd be buying good stuff, but I'm lucky.
Oh, absolutely, I've got a Ryobi drop saw, but don't tell anybody.
I saw that. I think you put a photo of that. Is that my...
Yeah, the wife was cutting. Yeah. But we digress. We probably should wrap this thing up, because I reckon we've probably done enough for tonight, because I've got to go and cook tea, but we probably need to pick it up and maybe explore some stuff again. We might even want to get on Steve at some stage and have a four-way conversation around
that'll be cool. I was just I was just talking to him before, and he'd be keen for that. But he's
loves a chat.
Yeah, Dave's got a little crush on him.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, we all do. What do you mean, does he? We all do.
I know. Yeah, we need to. What we need to get him.
I don't have a crush on anybody. Thank you very much.
We probably should get him on, and you two guys can ping the questions at him if you've got this brewer's crush on him, and get him to have a chat about it. I reckon we'd be able to organise that. Of course, he'd be listening, so he'll message us all straight away.
He might do. I got to witness him having a hose shower at the brewery, though, when I was there. Apparently he does it every day. He just walks into the middle of the brewery, just grabs the hose and has a shower in the middle of the brewery.
Really?
I looked at him. I was like, hey, you actually do this every day? He's like, yeah, man, just go for a walk and come back and have a shower and, yeah. Well, you can do when you live in Hawaii, right? Like middle of winter, and it's okay to have a cold shower with a hose.
Yeah, you're not going to do that in Tasmania ever.
Oh, even here, mate. Jesus
Christ. Yeah. All right, gents, thanks for the edumacation lesson again tonight. Dave, you're great. And Ben, you're pretty good too, mate.
I was all right.
It's all right. You really came into your own at the end there when we started talking about the wild stuff.
I don't think I've got much to say for this episode. You really did a good job.
Yeah,
mate.
Bloody hell.
I'm one of those things that's like, if someone asks me something, I'm like, geez, I don't fucking know about that. But then you more than start talking about it, I must just have this little storage thing in the back.
You're thinking, how can I work that little piece of knowledge into the conversation and make it sound like it flows?
Yeah, exactly. Ask me to explain anything that I actually talked about, I wouldn't have a clue, mate. But
that's great. All right, gents, thanks very much. And until we talk again in this great big craft beer land of ours, cheers to great beers.
Cool, bro. Thank you.
Pleasure. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?